Welcome to Healthcare and Hire, a podcast for healthcare professionals and aspiring healthcare executives looking for information, association, and inspiration from higher-level leaders across the healthcare industry. I'm Iqbal Acha, career consultant, healthcare recruiter, and registered pharmacist. Every week, I sit down to interview healthcare executives, clinical leaders, medical entrepreneurs, and industry experts to learn how they got to where they are today, what they see as the future of healthcare, and what they're doing to make healthcare more accessible, affordable, and effective. Let's find out more about today's guest. Dr. Chris Salinas is the Global Head of MedTech Advisory and Innovation at Salesforce. He partners with MedTech organizations around the world to incorporate digital platforms that support customer interaction by aligning to the continuum of care, driving quality outcomes, and delivering growth. Before joining Salesforce in 2020, Dr. Salinas was the head of marketing for Stryker's Latin America region and was responsible for the go-to-market strategy for all business units and divisions operating across 9 countries. Dr. Salinas received his medical degree from Universidad Mexico Americana del Norte and is published in the Journal of Arthroplasty. He is a member of several industry and medical associations, including Healthcare Information and Management Systems Society, the American College of Healthcare Executives, and the World Association Against Infection in Orthopedics and Trauma. Hello, Dr. Salinas. Welcome to the Healthcare and Hire podcast.
Hey, Iqbal, how you doing?
I'm fantastic, sir. How are you?
I'm doing great. And please call me Chris.
Chris, it is. It is an honor and a thrill to have you on the show. Chris, I've been watching you make the rounds on LinkedIn and a lot of social media platforms. So I mean, basically having you here is a legend. And I think that the listeners are really going to appreciate not just hearing what you have to say, but the way that you're going to describe the industry, the profession, and then how you've been able to manage your skills and experiences to really take you, your team, and your company to a higher level. So the listeners today, many of them know you. Some of them may know me. Maybe a few of them are unfamiliar with both of us. Why don't we take this opportunity and have you introduce yourself formally? Tell us a little bit about who you are, what your role is, and how do you help take healthcare to a higher level?
Love it. Outstanding. So first and foremost, thank you so much for the invitation. I really appreciate it. I think it's a wonderful opportunity not only to have the opportunity to share what I do on a day-to-day basis or what my team is really focused on, but more importantly, how we're contributing to that overall ecosystem of health that we talk about quite a bit. So my name is, like you mentioned, Chris Salinas. I am the Global Head of MedTech Advisory and Innovation here at Salesforce. That's a very, very kind of long title to be able to describe what I do, and I always get asked that. So I've kind of narrowed it down to 3 key areas of where we focus in every single day. So the first one is very much an external facing, just like we are now, right? What is it that we can do to contribute to really drive the discussion and engagement from a medical device perspective and what's occurring in the industry as a whole? We've seen the industry change quite a bit over the past couple of years because we went through the pandemic, and that kind of revolutionized the entire way, not only healthcare, but the medical device space has operated. So a lot of it has to do with that external discussion. So I lead a lot of engagements around executive engagements, roundtables. I have the opportunity to go and present at conferences, trade shows to discuss what's the latest with regards to trends. I constantly keep my finger on the pulse of what's occurring globally. I also serve as a trusted advisor to many executives in the healthcare space, specifically for medical devices, and have the opportunity to provide inputs and feedback on what's occurring from a business perspective. And then, of course, internally, I get the chance to work every single day with our internal groups across the different sub verticals that Salesforce has, from a here's what's happening, here's why this is important, why is it relevant to what we do each and every day, and really carry that message internally as well. So there's just kind of a little bit across the global lens, if you will, but that's kind of my role in a couple of sentences, as much as I can try to minimize it or simplify it in a way possible.
I mean, that's a very appetizing taste, Chris. I got to be honest with you. I mean, you know, most people that might be tuning in for the first time, either to this show or just to listen to you, may be thinking, you know, Salesforce. I'm very familiar with that as a customer relationship management tool. But, you know, I think a little bit of context for the listening audience will be extremely helpful. So for those of you that have a one-sided perspective of Salesforce, let me give you a little bit of information here. We know that Salesforce started in 1999 by a former Oracle executive, and that when it began, it really did begin as a customer relationship management tool, offering that for a variety of different tools. But I mean, that was like 21, 22 years ago. In that two decades of time, like, it has grown in such a capacity that it is now offering services and tools and products that really branch out into like cloud, social, mobile, in a variety of industries, right? We're talking like food, manufacturing, healthcare. And when you think about the individual players that are in the healthcare and life science space, you know, you're not just talking healthcare providers. You're talking pharmaceutical companies, you're talking about providers, payers, public health, and the tools that you offer today really require a healthcare professional that can help individuals who are maybe unfamiliar with how patient care looks like to navigate that water. So the quality of the product and services that Salesforce offers meshes well with what their business aims are, as well as patient aims. So today, when we think about Salesforce, you know, I try to tell my and educate my listeners today, like, it's not just, you know, this CRM company. It is far and wide beyond what you can imagine. We have 77,000 employees or 110 offices. And if I'm not mistaken, your last quarter readings, because it is a publicly traded company, made $26.5 billion in revenue. I mean, these are staggering numbers, right? And when I remember, like, back in 99, when I first graduated pharmacy school, you know, Salesforce was like, you know, I heard about it when I heard about Dreamforce 5 years later. I was like, oh, well, this is a pretty cool, you know, pretty cool concept. But to have somebody like you, you know, help us understand how Salesforce has branched out and now is using, you know, their tools to help aid providers elevate patient outcomes, make sure that we reduce costs in the healthcare space. Like, I am super psyched and stoked to hear what you have to say. And I know my listeners are going to be as well. Chris, why don't we help us understand a little bit about what you do? I know that you mentioned, you know, several of the variety of, you know, the variety of areas that you delve in. Give me an idea of maybe like the team's focus that you have, what size your team is, and maybe a recent development or success that you and your team have, you know, really championed within your space, and you have something demonstrable that you'd love to share with us. Because I think that the listeners are like dying to understand, like, what is Salesforce? You know, how can I find out more about what Salesforce is doing in the real world?
Yeah, for sure. No, and I would say I'll kind of kick off with this. If we're not connected through LinkedIn, please reach out. I'm happy to connect. I'm always happy to speak to anyone live as well. So not a problem there. But when you think about not only team impact and where we're working on a day-to-day basis, think global. You have to really wear a global lens. So whether that's APAC, EMEA, Australia, New Zealand, LATAM, the US, Canada, America, as a global organization, we have the opportunity to work with many customers, you know, independent of where their region might be. So from a team perspective, we have folks in every single one of those regions that have the opportunity to work with customers, potential customers, as well as just with the industry alone, right? So many times you think, I need to connect with somebody, learn a little bit more about the industry, feel free to reach out. We're always willing to have that discussion and conversation. When you talk about what we've been contributing to, I'm going to take a very MedTech lens focus on kind of the day-to-day. I talked briefly, you know, earlier around what's occurred from a MedTech perspective, but over the past 2 years, the medical devices industry has really changed and transformed in the way they do business. And I'm going to take one more step back when you talk about Salesforce. And you're right, most people, the moment they see Salesforce next to my name, they think Salesforce, check, I've got a CRM, check, I understand your world completely. But you're right, Iqbal, completely. Like, there's so much more that goes to it. I always encourage folks to think of a platform that's completely end-to-end. So if now we think about the medical devices industry, we've got to think from the very beginning, the moment that they're considering thinking, going through the ideation phase from an R&D or a research and development standpoint of a product that's going to come to market, they've got to be thinking platform already. How does that ultimately connect into testing, clinical trials? Think about from a clinical affairs standpoint, regulatory, compliance. Now we're talking legal. Then we talk about how are you going to get that product and commercialize it? Manufacturing, how is it going to be made? Marketing, sales, service. The product is already in the customer's hand. Everything from onboarding of staff from an HR perspective, talent development and retention over time. And then not only from that standpoint, but think of M&A. We see a very big increase, especially in the medical devices arena, around mergers that are occurring and acquisitions of not only whole organizations, but also portfolios or individual products. As more and more medical device organizations continue to evolve to this new landscape of what I like to call our next normal, right? It's not our new normal, it's our next normal. We've always kind of lived in that normal space. This next normal that we talk about is really having medical device organizations focus more and more in where do they live today and what do they need to complement from a product or a service perspective for their devices to be successful and continue to deliver value that are tied to the continuum of health. So when you look at it from that lens, you think, wow, I've got a lot that I've got to tackle. I've got a lot that I've got to take on. And that's really where Salesforce comes in and does a phenomenal job. Beginning, like I talked about, from an R&D perspective, all the way to the end, which is the end user, whether that's a clinician, a patient, a consumer, you name it, that entire aspect. And it's not a one straight line, but it's creating feedback loops into the entire process, right? What do you need for a next generation product? What insights and data are you collecting along the way that can help you not only create the organization you are today, but I would say more importantly, the organization that you want to be in the future. There's a question that I always ask executives when I jump on a call, and it's interesting because some of them will take it and really think about it. Others will immediately react and laugh the moment I say it. But imagine getting on a call and you're talking now to an executive at a medical device company that makes, I don't know, $5-10 billion of revenue a year. And the question that I ask him is, who do you want to be as an organization when you grow up? Immediately it sends you a smile, right? They're going to say, like, are you kidding me, Chris? We're a global organization, global footprint. We specialize in numerous different disease states that we're providing value to. And I'm going, I understand that. It's not meant to be a challenge. On the contrary, it's meant to get you to think of where do you want to go? You know, they've written books about this all the time, right? And they write books about it all the time. What got you here won't get you there, right? But if you are here today, where do you want to go 5 years from now, 8 years from now, 10 years from now? What is that vision that you see as the leader of an organization to get you to where you want to go? And in order to do that, how is it that data is helping you shape the organization that you want to be? And it's really important because when you think about data, I've said this a couple of times in some presentations. So for those of you that have heard it, here comes the repetition, right? Data is more valuable than gold. Data is more valuable than oil. Data is more valuable than any precious stone because it can help you understand who you are today, whether that's in healthcare, as a patient from a treatment plan perspective, or in the medical devices space as an organization. And more importantly, it can help you shape to where you want to go in the future. So a little long-winded, but hopefully that's helpful to understand the impact here that we're talking. It's in the entire ecosystem as a whole.
It really is. And Chris, I love the way that you described that, right? Because when I think about how, I don't want to use the word invasive because that's not proper, right? But it's so imbibed in so many different aspects. I think that as a healthcare professional or a healthcare executive, or even as a patient or anyone that's involved in healthcare as a whole, like the necessity to understand how data plays a role in not just 5 years down the road, 3 years down the road, 1 year down the road, 6 months. The rapid pace of advancement in technology critically is really reshaping the way that we approach patient care. It's the way that we gather data, and it's the way that we improve our protocols in order to be able to provide the right answers to problems that quite honestly, either are right around the corner or are right under our noses, and we're just not even aware of that. So I'm really glad to see that. You know, Chris, when you think about like how, you know, you mentioned before, like the pandemic really shifted a lot in terms of how the med tech industry is operating today. Can you give me some details about like what what impetus or what, like, what changes did you see become out of this pandemic that has now become a standardization across the industry? Where are we now today within this industry that, like, oh, well, you know what? Since 2020, we cannot go back to whatever that was because it's just not functional and it's just not valuable.
Yeah. So there's been a couple of key areas that have changed completely, right? Let's go back to the beginning of the pandemic when we went into these lockdown stages, lockdown phases. Everybody was at home, right? We were all trying to find a way to keep connected with customers. You saw on social media how multiple different posts started, you know, very early on with education, trying to continue the conversation with customers so that they understood. And again, from a medical device perspective, then you take the healthcare lens, what occurred there? They were so focused on making sure that they were treating patients, and they were doing a phenomenal job, and they still do, right? Hats off to all those clinicians that are on those front lines. They did a phenomenal job to say, how do we adapt for us to continue to provide care, not only within our own communities, but those that are not able to come into the facilities, right? And that's where telemedicine really kind of took off, and we saw it make a huge jump. And from there, I think there were some big lessons learned for the medical device industry when we said, well, we can continue to stay connected with customers. We can continue to provide products. We can continue to provide input and support on those devices as they're being used. How do we do that, right? That was a big question mark. And how do we do it in a secure manner, but also in a manner that is able to provide kind of a next generation creation of how do you engage with a customer from where we were previously? Because in the past, it was all face-to-face. If I didn't jump on a plane and go see you in person, it probably wasn't a meeting, right? Or if I didn't jump in a car and go drive somewhere, it probably wasn't a meeting. So now, when you think about it, it's now we talk about hybrid engagement, which is a big shift that has occurred. I'm not saying that it's completely remote. I'm not saying that it's completely in person, but it's how do you meet the customer where they are today? And more importantly, at the time that they're able to. So think of sales representatives that were going into these facilities to connect with customers in the healthcare systems. In the past, they may have had 30 minutes to have a discussion over a period of a week. That window has now narrowed down initially to zero, right? Now you got to find some time. Now it's come back, but it's also come back to a place where, do I need to give you 10 minutes or is five enough? Maybe it's 15, it's no longer 30. So it's going to mean different things to different people, but that hybrid engagement component is key. How do you keep the conversation going even when you are not there as a sales representative, be able to connect to provide support as a medical device company without physically being there? Is that connecting remotely through portals so customers are able to go and obtain the information they need? Is it a chatbot that can help me track my order to know exactly where it is? And here's an interesting figure. Over 60% of the calls that go into call centers from a medical device perspective, many times it's the own sales representative calling to find out and track an order for a customer. Interesting, right? That's a very, very big number. So if you think if we can simplify that process, not only for that sales representative that's out there connecting with that customer, but also for the customer themselves, so that they are able to then, you know, look up whatever that order might be or simply get an update or a status of where that is along the way. Because we know any product that arrives later than it's anticipated could have a potential impact on the way care is delivered, right? Let's be honest. Whether that product is going to sit on the shelf to be used later that afternoon, or if it's needed that same moment to arrive in the morning, because it's going to be used on a patient immediately once it arrives. So those are some of the things that we see, you know, from a hybrid engagement standpoint. There's also been a reintroduction or re-understanding of where is it that the value is associated from a product. So you've got medical device companies that are looking further downstream to better understand what is it that delivers value beyond just the interaction with their clinician, which definitely there's value there, interaction with their healthcare system, definitely value there as well. But if it's a product that the patient winds up leaving with, whether that's implanted, they're carrying it their hand, or they use it when they get home, what is the value that we're missing out on? And that's the feedback that they want to gather. They want to understand what's the additional value there so they can bring that back into the discussion. When you talk to payers, right, these large insurance groups or healthcare systems or their clinicians to say, here's what we see from your patient population and the value that we're delivering beyond just you using the product, but here's what your patients are seeing. And why is that important? Over 40% of Gen X, Gen Z, and millennials really look to social media, whether that's a search engine, some type of post on social media, to get input as to what is it that they need from a health perspective or from a device perspective. Now, think about that for just for a second, right? Imagine me I'm going to go get feedback from my neighbor. I'm going to get feedback from my family. I'm going to get feedback from folks that I know on social media, right? If I'm that patient, one of those 40% of folks, then I'm getting a lot of information there. The reason why that's important is because there's this consumer aspect that has now changed within the healthcare system. When you have patients that are taking an active role in having a discussion with their clinicians around, why is it that I need this product? Is this the best product for me? Are there other products that might be better for me? As a matter of fact, my friend Iqbal, my neighbor Iqbal, my, you know, whatever, told me that he actually had a device and this is what it worked for him. And these are the results that he saw. So now I want to find out, is that product good for me as well? That changes the conversation altogether. So if you notice, when you go on and make it and do a search, when you find that specific product, you're now seeing more of kind of that ecosystem that I talked about earlier, where you're having potential patients, users of a specific device that are being then connected with a clinician in their area, right in their backyard, that has not only been trained, that might be certified on a specific procedure, on the use of a device that can help them better understand if that is the right device for them. Important to note, the clinician ultimately will continue to provide inputs into, does that make sense for that patient? It's not a decision that is made in a silo by the patient themselves, but in collaboration with their clinician, they're not having that dialogue.
But Chris, I mean, that is so remarkably well-structured, right? When you think about it, like here I am, you know, and I'm a Gen Xer, right? So I'll be very transparent with you. Like I can remember back in the day when it was like, oh, I've got a cough. I wonder what it could be. Where do I go? I go to WebMD, right? Just to find it out, because yeah. I just didn't feel like it was necessary for me to start talking to people. And then if the cough persisted, well, then that led to a conversation with, you know, my wife or my parents or my kids and be like, oh, I wonder what's going on. And, you know, and that snowballs up, right? But what I find really fascinating is that when you are able to insert, you know, by using data and by using technology for somebody 10 o'clock at night, 11 o'clock at night, they're scrolling through and they're like, yeah, I really think that there's this device that's out there. There has to be something, right? And then once you start just doing a simple search and it can connect you to a clinician that can speak to the value and help determine if it's the right mm-hmm. device for you based on a series of clinically driven protocol design questions. I mean, it's remarkable to see that. Chris, when you think about medtech in the healthcare industry, like what should come as top of mind for healthcare professionals and executives? What should be the first thing that hits us when we start thinking about, you know, in this space of med tech?
First of all, it's changed. So you have to start there, right? And there's even a slide that I use more often than not to share my message around the industry. What should you think? What should be top of mind? And we're not going to go back to 2019. So we always start off there, right? We're starting where we are today. We've learned quite a bit over that period of time, over these past 2-3 years. Why is that very important? Because we've gone through a couple of different phases. We went to a very reactive phase, which is we all kind of scrambled. This is new. How do we figure this out? Where do we get the right resources to support customers? Again, from a medical device perspective, how do I continue to keep my day-to-day operations as much as I possibly can under this next normal, right? It changed. The landscape changed. From there, we went into more of a proactive phase to say, okay, we've built a series of capabilities, whether that's remote connectivity, you know, engagement from a streamlining process around insights and data and providing resources and real-time information, you name it. From a proactive standpoint, how do we build upon that foundation where we want to go now, right? Now you're having more of an kind of a aha moment to say, ah, we built it. Aha, now what do we want, right? It's like, that's that proactive stage. And there are several medical device organizations that are now in that third component, which is that more strategic phase to say, I've built it. I know exactly where I want to go. And now I'm building out the plan of where that might be. But if you notice, all of those three phases have one thing that ties them all together. And that's the big thing that I always tell people, keep that top of mind. It's all centered on data, all of it. From the very beginning, the reactive, we were looking at data to say, how many people are at home? How can I get a hold of them? How can I stay connected? What information is needed? How do I provide services and keep my products going from my warehouse directly into those facilities to keep supporting healthcare and become a valued partner in this entire process? Now you move into that next one in that proactive to say, in this proactive phase, I've built those capabilities, again, on data. What do I need? Go back and analyze. What, you know, touch points do I have? What data do I have in insights? Where have those kind of light bulbs gone off to say, we need to also add, right? It's that that phrase that we always say, you never say but, you always say and, right? This, and we would like to have these next pieces for the next strategic phase that put you into that proactive component. That last strategic space is now taking all of that data that you've built to ultimately, like we talked about earlier, is build the organization that you want to be in 8-10 years down the road. So if you think about it, we did it in a very narrow time. These were plans, and I want to make sure that we all agree to this. These were in the plans for most, if not all medical device organizations to do this shift that occurred in a matter of weeks and in others in a matter of months, but it was planned for a couple of years down the road. We all said, yeah, we'll get there. 8 to 10 years, we will get there. And we will work a little bit at a time towards it. What happened over these past couple of years is there was a shift in the market that we had to react to and force us to crunch that time down, like I mentioned, to in some cases weeks and others months, but we all had to react very quickly to make sure that we could continue to support that continuum of healthcare in that ecosystem that we talk about.
It's remarkable to see what the future holds, right? And when I think about the future, right, you know, the idea of asking what's the next 5 years look like, that's not a realistic question, right? It's almost like asking, well, what does your world look like in 20 years? Because at the way that we're moving today, right, like honestly, by 2023, when we meet in a year, right, like it's going to be a totally different world just because of the advancement of tools, technology. But I think it's remarkable because, you know, as I see all of these companies that are coming up with these amazing wearables and, you know, different types of technology that both patients and providers are starting to look at, like, hey, you know, if we can prevent another emergency room visit, if we can prevent an asthma attack because we've got the data, you know, now we've got something. And I think that that's where healthcare professionals and executives are like recognizing, like, okay, we need to make sure that the data is pure, that it's collected, that it's analyzed properly, and that we've got experts in the field that can analyze this and tell us what the story is. You know, and I'll be upfront, like, you know, for the many years of going through pharmacy school and being a practitioner, working with patients, like the analysis of all of that was very limited. It was very transactional. And I'm going to go out on a limb. I'm going to assume that a lot of healthcare professionals, regardless of the discipline back in the day, was less analytical and more transactional. But we're talking like 20, 30 years ago, right? Now, like it's very much, you know, almost everyone's responsibility to be able to look and say, you know, why do you keep coming back to the ER? Why do you keep asking for an extra refill? You know, things of that nature to help them say, we need to see the bigger picture here. So it's remarkable to see you in this space and others like you that are in the driver's seat of how healthcare is going to shift. Chris, we've talked a lot about Salesforce and MedTech. I'd like to kind of, you know, pivot a little bit more into you as a professional and some of the steps that you've taken. You know, you've had a great career and some remarkable opportunities to be able to leverage your knowledge and your skill sets in a variety of ways. As you mentioned earlier today, you are the global head of MedTech Advisory and Innovation at Salesforce. Prior to this, you served as the senior director of global healthcare and life sciences at Salesforce. Before joining Salesforce, you were with Stryker, serving as a director of marketing and as well as a senior manager of surgical clinical solutions and a variety of other positions that you held. But even before that, you were working as a therapeutic specialty representative, specifically in neurology, neurological pain at Pfizer. So you've had, you know, this amazing journey where you've been able to, again, bring your knowledge and engage other providers and other payers and other, you know, big players in the space. Moving up the career ladder, so to speak, like, you know, I'm sure that you have had to had, you know, a moment or two to pause and reflect before ever accepting a position to recognize, did this align with who you were? Right, Chris, you and I have had previous conversations before we've gotten on this call. And, you know, we've had some meaningful insights about, you know, how to put things into perspective, like what's important and then how to put those as big blocks, as immovable boulders so that when something comes along, it doesn't shift that and suddenly make something else a priority. So when this opportunity came along for you to move into this role at Salesforce and even before this position, accepting a role with Salesforce, You know, what were some of the factors that probably went into your decision-making process, whether it was by yourself, working with your significant other or family members, even your professional, colleagues to decide and really understand, was this the right position for you?
We'll be right back after this short break.
Yeah, so honestly, going through the decision-making process is not, I'll never say it's easy because it's never easy, right? You always have to think about, first of all, does it align with who you are as an individual, right? Does it ultimately align with your own bigger vision and goal of what you like to do? And three, is it really something that is going to challenge and motivate you on a day-to-day basis? I'm a big believer, if you get too comfortable in your role and you think you know it and you think you figured it out, maybe it's time that you get a little bit more of a challenge to move into a role that does challenge you beyond that. So for me, there's a couple of different steps that I take. When I look at a role or an opportunity, first and foremost, I see the impact that it's going to take on my own personal, my home life, if you will, right? What does that look like for my family? I do go through a process of sitting down and understanding, what does my day-to-day look like? What will it look like differently moving into a different role? And what is that impact going to be for me from a home perspective? And mind you, my children are older, so it's a little bit of a difference as well as where you are, because I've had to look at different roles along my career and I've had to make decisions based on where they are as well with regards to their age, right? They're adults now, so it's a little bit of a different lens that I've got to look through that. So that's the first aspect. The second is, I'm a big believer that you need to have a board of advisors. And this might sound a little comical, but it's a group of folks that are maybe within the organization that you are in today, outside of the organization that you are, you've probably had a chance to work with them previously. They might just be people you know, or they've known you, so they know who you are at your core, that can give you a very objective view of what that might be. So my father was one of those folks that sat on my board of advisors. My father passed several years back, but he was somebody that I would go to and say, hey, here's a question. Here's what I'm thinking. What are your thoughts? I'd love to get your feedback, because he was one of those individuals that knew me at my core, right? He's known me since I was born, right? So he probably has seen me grow up and develop into the individual that I am today, but he could provide that feedback. I talked about my wife as well, right? It's like, she knows me as well, you know, to my core, she knows who I am and can give me that honest and objective feedback. But folks that I've worked with previously at multiple different levels, whether it's a peer, somebody that I reported to, it's, you know, a leader within an organization, but just share with them, here's what I'm looking, here's some of the reservations that I have, here's some of the benefits that I have. So looking at it from both aspects, you know, I'd love to hear your thoughts, knowing who I am and knowing what I'm able to bring to the table. Does this not make sense? And I've had a couple of, you know, big aha moments when I've had people review and provide feedback from the outside in, that board of advisors. In one case, I remember being asked, you know, is this the right role for you, but what would you contribute to it? And I'm like, if you can't see it, then I need to make sure that I can see it, right? So that's an interesting point, because I would want to make sure, if you as an outsider are not able to see why is it that I'm taking over that role or why I'm stepping into that position, then why am I considering that role or why am I considering that position? And that goes into that visibility of what you do day to day within an organization. Is it going to drive you? Is it going to motivate you? Is it ultimately part of, like I mentioned, that bigger vision and goal? For me, it's always been about, how can I contribute to healthcare in a greater, from an impact, from a global lens, right? What else can I do beyond just my day-to-day interaction? And as I see the advancements that are occurring, how can I contribute my own small, you know, grain of sand to this beach that we call, right, healthcare? How can I be a part of that and contribute to it, as small as that may be, or as large as that may be, right? So those are some of the areas that I go through when I start to determine, where do I go? How do I go? How do I figure that out? Is that role right for me? Do I take that next step? If so, where, how? So, I mean, they're never easy decisions, right? Let's be honest. We've all been there. They're never easy decisions, but you try to create some type of process that will help guide you to determine. The big thing that I would say, and this might be, this is a piece of feedback and something I've learned over the years, and folks can take it or leave it as they would like to, but it's, you've got to know who you are, you know, as an individual. And that's really important, because if not, it comes through, especially when you take on a leadership role. If you don't know who you are as an individual, it's very difficult. So if you say, I'm going to go and mirror or copy the leadership style of somebody that I've known, great. However, right, and instead of but, right? And what are you going to do about you? Because that leadership style is specific to that individual. What does that mean to you as a person, right? What are you going to bring to that? So that would probably be one piece of feedback and a whole lot of talking around how I go about the process to do so, but never easy.
No, I totally agree, right? But I think that the concept that you just shared is really, it solidifies the need to be able to get multiple perspectives about you as an individual from people that you trust. So one of the questions that, you know, I am curious to know about, right? You've had this board of directors, your wife's been on it, your dad's been on it. I'm sure many professional colleagues. Do you find yourself ever, because of the maturity and the progress of your own professional journey, do you find that sometimes people just are not a good fit any longer on that board and that you sometimes have to say, hey, you know, this was fun. I appreciate everything that you gave, but you know what? We're not going to have you involved anymore just because I'm a different person. And now I need something else, right? Because that's part of the journey, I would assume.
Absolutely. You know, those seats on that board of advisors that's providing impact about who you are as a professional will change over the years. And it's good to have an honest and candid feedback with them as well to say, you know, I'm looking for somebody that can help with whatever that might be, you know, personal development, leadership development, communication, executive presence, whatever it might be, bring it to the table and let people know. Because if you have them on that board of advisors, right, they're there for a reason and they know it. They also know, especially as you start selecting over the years, that if they're not the right person for that specific seat, they will go out and find who that might be. And could have a point of feedback to say, I'm not the right person for that. However, right, I've been asked to participate in people's development over my career. And there have been times where I've been completely honest and I've said, I don't think I'm the right person for you. I think you're at a level where you might need, and I will give individuals names or roles of people that they may want to connect with that could probably do a better job than I can. And that degree of self-realization, if you will, is something you want to make sure that you know from your board of advisors as well, that they realize that they might not be that person and that's okay. It doesn't say anything negative about them. It doesn't say anything negative about you either, but it's just an honest dialogue that you can have to say they have that understanding that there might be somebody else that can fill that role in the right manner. And that, like I said, and that's okay, but you're right. Those chairs do change.
You talk about in this, like you self-awareness, recognition, and, you know, gracious humility to be able to say, look, I'm not the guy or I'm not the girl, but you really should talk to John, Mary, or Muhammad, and I'll even introduce you to them, right? Because they are going to bring something that's valuable for you. And I'm still vested in your best interest. Mm-hmm. Yeah, I'm just absolutely not the one that can help you do it. And I like that. I like that a lot. Chris, you know, while we're talking about this subject, you know, I know that each of us individually, we're not successful by ourselves. Nobody ever is. You just can't wake up one day and be like, oh, I've amassed this much knowledge. I have this many certifications. I've done this much work in my experience. And therefore, you know, this success was due to my own efforts. It's a total lie. We both know it. There's always at least 50, 100 people that have like taken us under their wing in some capacity or opened a door or said, you know, Iqbal, there's just something in you. I don't know what it is yet, but man, you've got something and I want you to be able to shine. And they've opened doors for us. Is there an individual or two that you'd like to acknowledge on the show today that maybe knows, maybe they don't know, right? But just because of what they've done for you in your career, that you'd like to thank them for what they did and what was that?
Wow. So too many to list. That's just the truth, right? There are a lot of people that have played a very important role in from where I started my career to where I am today. Some of the names that come to mind as I think about transitions from different, you know, roles and functions, the first one that comes to mind is Dr. Luis Arango. Dr. Arango is a clinician, triple board certified, just extremely bright individual. Initially was my attending. Then he became my mentor, and then ultimately he became my friend. And that was something that was huge. That was huge for me. He took me under his wing and taught me as much as he possibly could, not only about the clinical side of medicine, which is great, but the human aspect of interacting with patients, on how he's so passionate about how he interacts and treats patients, as well as how he treats others around the world, period. I don't think there's one person that can probably say something negative about him. When you meet him, he's just a kind individual, loves what he does, and he's so focused on making sure that he's helping drive healthcare to that next kind of next step. So he would be one person that comes to mind immediately. Another would be Milo Caskey, right? Milo was a leader in a pharmaceutical firm that I was a part of. So I was part of Pfizer for numerous years, and he was a sales leader there. He cared about his team so much that to him, that cohesiveness about working with the team was so important. I learned quite a bit from that, right? That word care goes a long way. It's just making sure that you care for the folks that you work with and that you have the opportunity to work along with day in and day out. That's something that I saw from him. David Perez. David Perez is, he's actually based out of San Antonio here. He's a sales leader at a pharmaceutical firm, but he was my business partner, right? It's like we were in the same team and we worked together. He taught me, you know, responsibility. That's one of his big things. He's a big team player. He's an ex-athlete that is now in the pharmaceutical space, driven, but he's humble, right? He knows he keeps his awards, if you will, that knowing what he does every day, and he's great at it, but he is who he is. And he's just somebody that you get along with really, really well. Just an overall nice guy, and a tremendous professional, if not one of the best, sales leaders that I've ever had the opportunity to work with. And from there, we think about folks that are kind of in that next role. As I'm looking at the medical device space, you've got people like Jim Golson, who was a leader at Stryker for many years. Interestingly enough, when Jim retired, I recall that they turned on the lights and we were all gathered for a large meeting, and they threw up everybody's names that he had hired over an entire career at Stryker. And about half of the room stood up because they asked us all to stand up, but we had ever been hired by him. And that tells you a lot, because he had a real eye for talent. He could understand, you know, people, but he also gave them the autonomy and the opportunity to show, right? It's like, here, I'm going to give you the room. I'm here to support you. He was a great servant leader. What do you need? How can I help you make sure that you're successful? And that's something that I learned from him as well. And then towards, you know, moving into my career now, there's Annie Arnett is somebody that's also somebody that motivated me quite a bit. She saw my background. She was a leader at Stryker. She is now a leader in Arthrex, if I remember correctly, down in Australia. And she saw me she saw my background. She saw what I'd done previously. And she said, how do I take this individual and that skill set and talent that he has and apply it to what we do every day? So she had, again, it's that vision piece. She had that vision of how can I help you get there and help you understand as a person, what you want to get to professionally, and how do I help develop that over time? So she really had that vision there. There's another person that I learned quite a bit from. So those are just a couple of folks, kind of very, very, I don't want anybody to feel that I left them out on purpose, if you will. It's not so. These are just individuals that I think of immediately when I think of my career, where it started to where I am today, and how not only have they helped me better know myself, helped me better understand how they see their leadership styles, and have helped ultimately contribute to who I am as a professional today.
It's beautiful that, you know, you have so many people that you listed, and I'm sure that there will be other guests that I will have that will have the same problem as you do, right? Like how many people can I acknowledge on this like 5-minute segment of the show? But I think it's important, right? Because I know that, you know, when I think back to people that in my life were instrumental in opening doors and taking me under their wing, like, I don't know if they really ever understood what their efforts really panned out to be. And I was like, I feel like I've lost that opportunity because some of them are no longer with us. So that's one of the reasons why I ask that question as often as I do with my guests, because I think it's important that maybe they'll listen to it. Like, maybe they'll be like, you know, Chris was a nice kid. Like, that's what they say, right? Iqbal was a nice kid. You know, I'm sure he would have done it on his own, right? And the reality was no. You know, I don't think that you or I could have done it without their help. And so I always want people to hear how much they mean to us and what we do. Chris, again, you know, when I see you today in the light that you're in and knowing your history, like, you've done so much, you've achieved a lot. And you continue to have a massive impact in the world of both healthcare, in both, you know, healthcare professionals and the engagement that you have with other people that are looking to branch out with their knowledge and their skill sets, but also, of course, in the medtech industry. What else is like the next big thing for you to tackle? Like, what else are you setting up as part of your professional bucket list where you're like, you know, right now in this role, I'm super happy, but in this role, here's what I want to see happen. And I want to be instrumental in seeing that change occur, or bring this into Salesforce, or educate others that are in my space, you know, in different, you know, within the industry. Like, what have you targeted for the next 12 months, which is like, Chris Salinas is going to do this no matter what happens. This is it.
Yeah. So you're right. I've done quite a bit in my career, and part of sitting here and going through and thinking about where I've started, where I am today, it really takes you into what would you like to do right now, and the now what, right? What would you like to do now? For me, I think having the opportunity to be a part of the healthcare ecosystem and contribute, like I said earlier, you know, my little grain of sand to that, you know, larger beach is, I would really like to work on development. And I think about development of leadership. How can I help others that are leaders within the industry continue to develop themselves to give more into this entire ecosystem that we operate in within healthcare? Whether that's from a pharmaceutical, medical device, you know, healthcare development, management, you name it, right? It's like, for me, it's about how can I help other leaders achieve that and get to that next point? Not only taking from personal experiences, but bringing others that are also experts in that field to help develop the future leaders of tomorrow. And that's where I want to kind of contribute to. And if that's, you know, participating on a podcast, like, you know, we are here with you, to where we're able to reach an audience of future leaders, other leaders that are also looking to contribute. How can I help them to make sure that they are also developing? Is it leaders that have been in the industry for a while that we want to help develop them into that next stage? How do I contribute to help them achieve that as well? To me, I think I'm at the point in my career where I would like to contribute more towards that grander or that bigger vision that we all have when we start, right? To me, it's always been about having my fingerprints or contributing to where healthcare is going and being a part of it and finding solutions and finding that common ground and how we're able to work together and ultimately provide better patient care, better outcomes, and really improving health as a whole. So for me, it's really that. It's how can I help develop other leaders within the organization?
That's a remarkable it's a remarkable opportunity for you as well as others, because I think, you know, when you're in a position where you are today, you have that, I'll call it a luxury, but it's really a responsibility, and it's a pretty heavy one, right? Like, you know, you're fortunate because you have the ability to have such a positive impact on others, but at the same time, the advice, information, guidance you give them is very, needs to be structured, you know, accurate, based on data, of course, right? But, you know, it needs it needs to be meaningful for the person, and you are the one that's actually analyzing the individual, the options, and then letting them know, like, hey, this is where you can do that. So let's talk a moment about leadership development, right? Like, I'm still on that journey. We are all on that journey. No matter how high you get within an organization, it's never that you hit a peak and you're like, hey, this is it. You know, I'm the leader, I'm the leadership guru, and this is now, this is the epitome of what leadership looks like. When you think about your own personal journey towards becoming a better leader, what are some books, resources, individuals that you naturally gravitate towards, or you are currently absorbing or consuming to be able to grow that base, not just for yourself, but also for your immediate team?
Yeah. So there's an author that I've read several of his books and actually had the opportunity to meet him back in 2016, 17 timeframe, I want to say, John Gordon. He's written multiple different books around leadership development, just overall growth, if you will. And there's a book that he wrote that to me really kind of hit the nail on the head for me. And it's The Energy Bus. I don't know if you've had a chance to read it, but it's outstanding. And I absolutely love it. So I actually had a copy, and I say had, because since then I've given that copy away, believe it or not, at a signed copy of John Gordon's book, The Energy Bus, that he signed. I still have the picture to actually prove that I did meet him and that I did talk to him. But that, in that book, The Energy Bus, it was really interesting because it leads you to think, you know, you are the driver, which means where do you want to go? You're ultimately responsible for the decisions that you make within your career. 100% agree, right? You have to keep this kind of bigger vision goal where you're going to. 100% agree, right? You're working towards something. The seats that are on the bus are kind of limited, right? It's not endless. You got to make sure who you're picking to bring on your bus. You have to make sure that you're sharing that vision with others so that you can get buy-in for them to be a part of that bus and that direction of where you're going. And you've got to have the energy that's contagious. I can tell you that in previous leadership role that I've had, people would always laugh because I would show up on Friday and at the top of my lungs. And even today, I still do it here at Salesforce, and I just do it in a different manner, right? We use Slack here, and in the group that we have for our team, you know, the first thing that pops up every Friday is me just saying Happy Friday, right? It's like just telling everybody to have a great one, enjoy their day. I would do that live whenever we were still going into the office. When I was at Stryker, and hopefully if anybody from my team at Stryker still is listening to this, they remember me walking in and just saying Happy Friday, right? That was a big thing for me. And it was very, very much trying to drive that energy of positivity, of people getting excited, right? So that passion really comes across. That's one author that I know for me was really important as I started to kind of take this second phase of understanding how do you contribute to this kind of greater cause? How do you help motivate others? How do you help kind of spread that joy, if you will, in what you do and get folks to get passionate about it as well? And it drove to what I would feel. And in my opinion, it was a very cohesive team, a team that worked extremely well together, that was passionate, that was excited about what they did. And they really enjoyed not only collaborating amongst themselves, collaborating across the organization, but would get really excited about delivering on their results. So that passion piece, the first author that comes to mind, that's John Gordon, does a great job with his books. And that, hopefully you get a chance, Iqbal, I highly recommend that you read it. It's called The Energy Buzz. It's a very light read. It's not a very big book, but there's some big aha moments that I know personally I've had. Another author that's also good for me is Maxwell. I'm a big fan of Maxwell. There's a book called The 21 Irrefutable Laws of Leadership.
Oh, yeah.
I read that very early on in my career, and it just kind of changed my view altogether. Most people think that when you're in a leadership role or you're entering a leadership role, you are in charge. You know, if they don't come to the realization that you are not, like, then maybe you should go out and read a couple of these books. I'm a big servant leader. So my job is to make sure that my team has all of the resources needed to make sure that they can deliver on those results. If they do that, we win as a team. If they don't, then it's time for us to roll up our sleeves and go to work with you. It doesn't mean that now I'm going to come in and say, you should have done this, you should have done that. That's not a leader. You don't point fingers, you roll up your sleeves and you make it happen. So those are two big authors that for me have really helped contribute. How do you get, you know, buy-in from folks? Maxwell does a great job at saying, and I'm probably going to say this wrong. So, John, apologies there, but it's, you gotta win the heart before you ask for the hand, right? It's like, get people to buy in on what you're doing before you ask them to contribute towards something. And I always looked at it as the law of the buy-in, right? I've got to get your buy-in. It's not me coming into a room and saying, gang, here's what we're doing, team, here's what we're going to focus on. No, it's here's what we would like to accomplish. What are we missing, right? Is the plan solid or not? Let's all contribute to make sure that we're not missing any pieces, because you could miss something by looking at it through the wrong angle, and make sure you put it together as a team. So get everyone's buy-in, and then everyone's going in the same direction, right? There's also another comment from John Gordon, not Don Maxwell, but from John Gordon. There's one piece in one of those books where he says, no energy vampires.
Yeah,
it's like, don't get any energy vampires, right? Those folks that come in and they just kind of draw the energy out of whatever you're working towards is like, stop, don't do that, right?
That's horrible.
Yeah, you don't want those folks. So those are a couple of key areas from some of those books, and some of them, you know, you'll laugh about them as you hear them later. But if you really think about them, they all play a role into how you develop as a leader. I think for me, the biggest thing for a leader is that they're able to share a vision, that they can contribute and bring the resources needed for that vision to be able to roll out. And more importantly, that at the end of the day, when that vision is accomplished, it's those folks, and it's mainly flipping the camera over to all of those individuals that made it possible, because it wasn't just one person. You may be the voice, you may be the point of reference, but it's all of the individuals that are part of that team that really made it happen. So it's never done in a silo.
So, Chris, what I really love is the fact that this is the 50th episode, by the way, and I don't know if I told you that or not, but you will be hallmarking 50 episodes of this podcast, and you are the first person to mention John Maxwell. I am a huge John Maxwell fan, and I'm surprised that, you know, after 49 other episodes and 49 other guests, you are my first. So I'm super happy that you said that. And number two, the energy bus is now going to be a for sure buy. Because I am a super, you know, I try to bring the energy no matter where I go as well, because I realize that, you know, not everybody's going to be in that mood or ability. They don't have the ability to do that. And they just need a hype person just so that they can get over the hump. And then they just, it's sort of like, you know, this inertia, you're just getting over the inertia. But I'm definitely going to pick up that book as well. So I appreciate that. And that's really good learning. So number one, that's amazing. Chris, when you think about how, you know, you were mentioning one of the individuals that was recognized at a company meeting, and you know, everybody was asked to stand that was a direct hire or was, you know, mentored by that one individual, and half the team, you know, stood up. Like that is a true testament to great leadership and a keen eye for talent. When you think about the world that we're living in today, right? Like especially in the last year or so, like this great resignation, the great reshuffle, the great all of it. Talent is super, super challenging to be able to find and then develop and then help promote. So when you think about qualities and characteristics in an individual, whether they're coming to look for an opportunity on your team, or maybe they're already present on your team and you're thinking about this guy or girl is amazing and we just need to get them promoted, what are like the qualities and characteristics that you identify as, I'll call them stellar, but just, you know, things that you can say, this is somebody that we need to bring on board, or this is somebody that the organization needs to leverage for the greater good. What are things that you identify as those qualities?
Okay. So there's going to be people that are going to listen to this and they're going to probably answer before I answer here, because I speak to these quite frequently. There are three things that I always talk about when you look at talent, when you're attracting them to an organization. The fact that you're here, right? You've made it to this point in this interview process, the search process, whatever you're going to call it, is because of what you've done, right? So you've got all of the education, experience, you name it, it's all there, got it. But there's three things that will definitely help you set yourself apart from everybody else. Three things are you humble? Right? Or are you somebody that's going to come in with a massive ego, which, let's be honest, it's may not be the best dynamic, right? Especially when you've got a team approach. So humble. The second one is hungry, right? Do you get up thinking, how do I make this better? How do I improve upon it? And what do I do to contribute? And then the third one is, are you passionate about what you do? Do you have a passion about something you do? And if it's not what you're doing every day, if it's something that we need to bring over from another area, it's how is it that you develop that passion for that might be? It could be a passion for giving back to your community. It could be a passion towards your cyclist and you just enjoy it and you're so passionate and you know every route and how to take it and all the details around it. It could be that you're passionate about reading books because you're just hungry and searching for that knowledge and understanding. How do we take that passion and fuel it into what you do every day? So that's those three things, in my personal opinion, are not things that you can fake, that you can alter, that you can kind of create immediately. It's something that you develop over time and you develop it over different roles. Everybody walks in with a big ego. Then you realize, that doesn't work. You got to kind of bring that back. So that humbleness from there, the hungry piece, you know that those folks that are kind of getting after it every single day and they're contributing, they're kind of moving along and otherwise you might be stagnant, right? And it's the big aha moment is, you know, the only constant is change, which means that you've got to change now to make sure that you are also driving and you're hungry and getting after it. And then the last one, like I mentioned, with regards to the passion piece, and that just tells you so much about a person. There have been times where I've been in conversations where I will literally say, I'm going to get on my soapbox and I'm going to talk about, you know, it's something that I'm very passionate. I feel very strongly about, but it doesn't mean that I'm going to come and kind of push it in your face and say, this is it. On the contrary, you're going to feel me being passionate about it. And hopefully that's also contagious to get you passionate about it, right? So that now we can then work together to make sure that we're seeing this in a very similar lens through two different sets of eyes, but through a similar lens to say, you're absolutely right. Let's make sure we're working towards that.
Chris, what I really appreciate the most about that is the order of the three that you placed, right? You placed humility first, you placed hunger second, and passion third. And I think that a lot of times people get that confused. Kids especially are told like, you know, follow your passions. Well, that's great, but that doesn't necessitate the hunger that should supersede that. Agreed. You know, the humility really does come first. So I'm glad that you place them in the order that you did, but I'm also glad that you spoke about them in the way that you have to help add that context. Chris, you've been so amazing on this show. I'm so glad that you came on and were able to provide us just a variety of different perspectives on a variety of different topics. Chris, one of the things that I always ask my guests is, you know, in the course of this conversation, you have shared a lot of knowledge and a lot of wisdom about how to navigate the professional waters and how to even navigate personal development. When you think about, you know, some pearls of wisdom that maybe we haven't touched on yet, especially for the audience that is looking for ways to advance their career and maybe struggling to figure out what that looks like, is there any other parting words of wisdom that you would have for them today that you can say, hey, you know, keep doing this, or if you haven't tried it, try this, but stay the course and you will see success come. What would those words be?
Network, 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 right? The more you're going to learn about an organization, a specific role, a next step in your career, it can come from some of those individuals that you network with, because they probably have been there, they work at a certain organization, and they can give you feedback on what it's like. Understanding the culture of where you're going is going to be key. Is it a good fit for you? Just because the role is available doesn't mean that it's the right role for you. You also have to know, you know, is this something that makes sense? So that's why the network piece is so important, to understand an organization, to understand a role, right? So for me, every time that I've posted a role, like on LinkedIn, for example, and people see it, I'll get a message. They'll say, hey, I'd love to talk to you about this role. I'm like, great. I'd love to find 15 minutes. Can I help answer any questions that you might have? And I'm glad that they do so, because you know what, after we talk, they go, you know what, it really wasn't what I thought it was. That's okay, right? There's many other roles that might be a better fit and still within the organization, because we want to attract that talent, but it might be a different role, different function altogether. So I would say, if you have the opportunity to network, do so. Connect with folks through different social media platforms that you can work on, and really look to what is it that you like to do. Keep that kind of vision and that goal of what you like to do long-term, and try to keep that in the center of where you're driving, right? Of where you're going towards, and how can that ultimately help you get there? And quite honestly, there's a phrase in Gordon's book that says, you know, that's the last one out of all of the different key takeaways from that, is just enjoy the ride. Cause at the end of it, it's phenomenal to be able to sit and go, wow, can you believe that, you know, this happened, that happened, or, you know, we accomplished this or whatever it might be, but just enjoy it, because it definitely is fun, without a doubt.
This is an incredible interview, Chris. Thank you again for being on the show. I feel so uplifted. I feel like super energized. It's like I just woke up at 8 o'clock and you know, in the morning, and I'm like ready to go tackle on another day. And I've been Love up it. Since you know six, so you know I'm pretty sure at this point now we're talking an extra 20 plus hours. Chris, again, very excited that you were on the show. Really, really grateful for the insights that you were able to share. I'm looking forward to hopefully meeting you in person one of these days. But until then, I'm wishing you nothing but success. And I'm looking forward to seeing you continue to take healthcare to a higher level.
Outstanding. Thanks, Iqbal. Appreciate it.
Thanks for joining me on this episode of the Healthcare and Hire podcast. If you liked what you heard, be sure to follow and subscribe for more. I'm your host, Iqbal Acha, and I invite you to connect with me on LinkedIn, Instagram, and Twitter. Let me know what you thought about this episode or my show in general. Also, visit me at www.achainternational.com to learn more about how I help healthcare professionals and healthcare leaders advance their career, build a better brand, and create a leadership legacy. I'll be back next week with another episode. But until then, let's keep working to take healthcare to a higher level.